Welcome to China Manufacturing Decoded from Sofeast, the podcast where we take you through some of the major topics facing importers and manufacturers in China today. Hi listener, welcome along to episode 35 of the podcast, and you're back with us after the Christmas and New Year break for the first episode of 2021. Adrian from Sofeast here, and I'm joined by our CEO Renaud, and in today's episode we're going to be discussing Renaud's thoughts on what's going to be happening in 2021 in the manufacturing industry as regards the coronavirus pandemic. And the main topic of the podcast is how to validate your supplier's production capacity, especially if you're not able to visit them on the ground wherever they're based in Asia. If these guys say that they're able to produce your orders at whatever order quantity you're asking for, and then it turns out that they're struggling to do so, that's going to delay your orders, it's going to cost you extra money, could lead to quality problems. So this is an important factor to consider. So let's hear what Renaud had to say about that and get into it.
Hi Renaud, Happy New Year, how are you doing?
Hey, Happy New Year to everybody. Good, a bit refreshed and ready to kick things off.
Excellent. That's what I like to hear. Me too. So thanks for catching up with me today. As ever, we are focusing today on a topic that we recently blogged about over on Sofeast, which is how to validate a factory's production capacity without going on site. But before we get into that topic, because we've just started 2021 here, I'd like to just ask you very quickly, what sort of things are you expecting to see in 2021? This could be in China, Vietnam, in manufacturing in general. You know, what are your sort of preliminary observations?
Well, there's going to be a phase in 2021 that's going to be basically the continuation of 2020. And I think we're still right there. There's going to be another phase where sufficient number of people would have been vaccinated, and I don't know how exactly people are going to keep track of that and show that they've had the vaccination, and they'll probably have a easier treatment. They might not be forced to stay in quarantine, so that would make things easier, just for people who have to travel a lot for business. That might unlock things for them, but I'm really curious to see how this falls into place. That there's a lot of uncertainty here, and then there might be a phase where, you know, a lot of people get the vaccine and things really get relaxed, but that I'm not sure that's going to be end of 2021 or maybe 2022. Who knows? So the phases, the, you know, big picture kind of thing, that's how I see things. I think everybody's seeing this more or less the same way, but the timing is totally unpredictable. I mean, so in the US, well, I saw that they already vaccinated 5 or 6 million people, in China even more, and it's started already in a bunch of European countries and so on. Well, things are on the way, and it's not a problem of administering the vaccines, because really all you need is to give it in the hands of doctors and nurses, and that can go really, really fast. But it's about, number one, the production, number two, the distribution, because distribution, if the vaccine has to be kept at minus 70 degrees Celsius, you can imagine that's not going to fly in the air. You can't put it in a plane for that. So what is it going to be? You know, very special containers and ships and things like that. So there are some very central places, like, you know, North America and Europe, where things can be distributed relatively well, but some other places where things will have to wait. So there's a lot of complexity there, and I'm not an expert, so I don't really want to come in too much, but a ton of uncertainty.
It's funny how you sort of attribute the relationship between unlocking sort of trade with the ability to go to China with the vaccine. And I think it's very fair to say, you know, at the moment, they've got a very, very stringent quarantine procedure. Yeah. And I would predict that even once foreign people are being vaccinated, there's still going to be some sort of quarantine process when you go to China.
And it seems like they kind of like to say that there's a lot of imported cases and the rest of the world is really doing a bad job and so on. So they're not really in a hurry to lift that kind of very stringent approach, as you mentioned, yes.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Sure. But even though China has sort of locked itself down from the world to an extent, which and this is not a political podcast, but there are pros and cons to different countries' approaches for sure. One thing we can say for sure is that manufacturing in China has been kind of going on mainly unfettered recently. And if we get through Chinese New Year without hitch in China, of course, then I suppose you're not predicting enormous changes in China, especially with the West still sort of struggling with the virus.
No, well, what's happened is a lot of demand for office equipment, home equipment, you know, anything for doing sport and I mean physical activity, cooking and all kinds of things like that, and you know, a lot of that is made in China, and it's actually it tends to be relatively large in volume, so it's put a lot of strain also on logistics with crazy prices for containers. I mean that's a whole other issue, but yes, China, a lot of China manufacturers are doing well, are doing better than they've ever been doing. That's amazing, and of course some others are struggling. I mean, you know, anybody who was providing products or equipment to, you know, restaurants, theaters, you know, I mean, that's really doing pretty bad. You know, hotels, all of these verticals are suffering a lot.
Right. Yeah, you're very right. And I suppose we're not going to see a lot of change in that until probably optimistically Q2 or Q3 of the year, you know, with the West, a lot of the West European countries in particular in sort of full lockdowns at the moment. There's not going to be a lot of change on that anytime soon.
Right. Yeah. Well, people say Q2, but it's not because McKinsey says Q2 that is going to be Q2. Let's see.
No. Well, let's cross fingers and hope for the best on that. Great.
Yeah.
Okay. So on to today's topic then. So just to reiterate, how to validate a factory's production capacity without going on site. We've already spoken a lot about validating suppliers and the vetting process. I suppose this sort of follows on from that to a degree. So why do we need to be able to validate a supplier factory's production capacity before we start placing orders?
Well, there's basically three cases. You know, the case number one, you know, your order quantities are going to be in the sweet spot, no problem. They can make it. It's not ridiculously low, so they pay attention to you, but it's not very high, so they don't really have any trouble fitting it in their production planning, right? That's sort of where everybody wants to be. Case number two is your orders are very low. You know, you're trying to work with a really big company, and you know, end of the year, your orders are just going to be a rounding error for them. It's maybe 0.1% or 0.5% or 1% of their output. And so, well, that might be okay if what you're buying is something that they make in a very standard manner. However, if you're looking for a special service and, you know, special help to do this and that and to be a little bit flexible and, you know, to maybe to make an effort on price, you might be disappointed. You know, they're not going to be flexible. So for some companies, that's really a deal breaker. They don't want that, right? So they want to be in case number one. And then you have case number three is your orders are just too big. Now, the problem is when you talk to Chinese factory owners, you know, the ones that have been successful very often have been the ones a little bit reckless, a little bit like, yeah, let's do it. Yeah, we can do it. We can do it. And then they sort of wonder, okay, now I get the order. How am I going to do that? You know, and it's just a reality that, in the past 30 years, this kind of behavior has been rewarded, you know, to an extent in a lot of cases. So that's the kind of habits that they have. That's just the way a lot of them do. So, you know, once they get your order and they're like, oh, wow, this, you know, they expect us to make that in 3 weeks, but we would need like, you know, 3 months to do it or 6 months or even more. What are they going to do? Nothing good for you. So there's different scenarios. The most common, obviously, is the subcontract. Maybe they're already pretty full and then they're looking for one subcontractor or five subcontractors. I mean, who knows? There's no limit here, right? So they might buy the materials and then farm out the transformation, you know, the fabrication, the assembly somewhere else. And in that case, well, how are they going to select the subcontractors? They're not going to select the most expensive ones. They're going to select the cheapest ones. And do they have the quality control staff to keep on top of everything to make sure everything goes the right way? No, they don't. So that's where a lot of the quality disasters from China, but also from Vietnam and some other places come from. Really, that's terrible. I mean, that is a disaster spell for your production. In some other cases, they're like, well, now I get, you know, this advance payment. I'm going to try to squeeze the suppliers to get some better payment terms. And then I'm going to use the money to buy some equipment, to automate further, to have more machinery. And then I'm going to hire 50 people to help do that, you know, or 200. So, you know, and they're going to receive the components to process in maybe in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And they're going to be running against the clock to put all of that in place. Well, that also doesn't play out nicely. That goes together with delays because there's always issues in the plan. It doesn't go as nicely as they would like and all kinds of problems. They don't know how to set up the machines. It creates some problems. They haven't got the ability actually to train all this new staff. They don't maintain the machines. They go down. They don't know, you know, there's all kinds of problems. They buy a large quantity of components or materials, and they don't even have the ability to check it when it arrives. Or they, you know, they're just too busy. They just take it and start to work on it. And that sounds really crazy, but we've seen it a number of times. They just receive and they just process it. They don't even pause and say, okay, is this any good? Because what's going to happen? You know, they don't want to think about it. If they send it back to their supplier, it's just going to add delays. It's just going to create delays. They don't want that. They just want to keep moving forward. Like, you know, it's the big machine that will not stop, basically.
Just get everything shipped.
Yeah, exactly. Get it shipped, get the full payment, you know, and keep rolling. That's sort of their dream, you know. They get very busy with very big orders and get a lot of money in. But on the customer side, that's something you really need to avoid, basically. Yeah, and there's also a sort of a cultural element to it. Is in a lot of Eastern Asian cultures, they don't really say no to your face. So if you say, "Can you make that?" Yeah. The yes that says I heard you, but doesn't say yes, I confirm, you know. And to a European or an American ear or a Brazilian ear, you know, that sounds like, yes, yeah, we can do it, no problem. We know what we're doing. We have a plan for it. Oh, okay, great. Very good. So that's really what you want to avoid, basically.
Yeah, okay. The whole yes thing, I mean, it's I think everybody's read about this probably by now, but until you experience it, it's so hard to really explain how all of that works and what it sounds like in reality. Because if you do go and speak to people in China, they're all saying yes, but how do you differentiate between an actual yes and a yes which is really a no? It's a bit of a needle in a haystack situation, isn't it?
It's like I had a friend who used to say it's never really a no, but some of them are, yeah, I hear you, but I haven't really processed it yet. So that might lead to a no. There's the yes, I understand, I see where you're going with that, but I haven't made up my mind yet. And then there's the yes of yes, I heard you, I understand, and I agree. But if you just listen and hear a yes and remain at that yes, you really don't know anything.
So we want to avoid these problems and the costs involved, the delays, the confusion, all of this is going to be caused if your potential supplier or your supplier just doesn't have the capacity to actually handle, the order quantity that you're trying to put through them. So, yeah, and at the top of this podcast, you discussed the restrictions on travel because of the virus, and this is affecting buyers' ability to go over to China or to Vietnam or to wherever and get an understanding of the supplier's real capacity and ability. So, with this in mind, how can we actually assess them?
What a lot of buyers have been doing is, for example, they would ask, okay, so how many people, and if the buyer that doesn't want delays and they think that the sweet spot for them is, let's say, from 200 to 600, if they hear 50 people, 100 people, they're like, ooh, that's sort of a red flag. That's sort of an easy one. The problem is a lot of manufacturers will say, oh yeah, we have 300 people, when actually they just have 80 people. That's not so uncommon. And this year it's even more common because there's no way for the buyer to come, and the factories know that not all buyers actually send auditors to check things on site or project managers or whatever. So they can really tell all kinds of lies and not be caught. And then, if the buyer comes in 18 months, well, yeah, we were quite busy, and then we fired that customer and da, 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 and we have another factory over there. Yeah, now it's just 80 people. So yeah. No problem, right? They can always explain things. How in these circumstances, how can a buyer have an idea about capacity? Well, there are some questions you can ask. But again, you would be dependent on what the supplier is going to want to tell you. And you can send an auditor. So there's a lot of companies, including Sofist, that can send an auditor to check and then say, oh, yeah, this process is looks like the bottleneck. And it makes whatever 2,000 pieces a day. Okay, well, that is useful. Now, if you don't want to send auditors for these kind of things, you can try to talk to your factory and ask them questions. So what we've found is if you ask them questions by email, or even WeChat, there's a higher chance that you get fake information than if you talk to them directly. If you talk to them directly, and especially Chinese ladies, will not be very likely to lie. Okay. There's a lot of talk about, oh, the Chinese are lying, blah, 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 blah. Actually, not that much when you really, when you know what to do and what not to do. But if you get them on the phone and you ask them some straight questions, the worst you will get is, I'm not sure, I don't know, I need to ask my boss, you know, but you can get a lot of information like that. And with relatively low risk of getting some lies. So the kind of questions you can ask is, but there's several sets of questions. The first questions would be about the components that they buy from outside, because maybe they're highly reliant on an upstream supplier, and there's one whatever sub-assembly component material that is difficult to get in large quantity, especially if it's custom made for your product, right? Maybe they have only one supplier of it, and that one supplier only has, you know, one piece of equipment running to make it. You know, that's not an uncommon situation. So you can ask, you know, okay, so what are the materials and components you buy? Which ones are custom made, right? Because anything that's off the shelf, they can usually buy in very large quantity. But anything custom made will depend on the manufacturer of that custom made component. Mm. And then what is their capacity per day? Okay, and you know, what's the percentage of the good pieces? Because you don't want the bad pieces. If there are bad pieces, well, they take some of the capacity and then they take it again when they are reworked. Not so good, right? So that decreases the actual capacity. And so that gives you an idea about their constraints from their supply chain. Then you can ask about their own processes internally, right? So what do you do internally? What are your processes in-house? And for each of these processes, how many pieces per day? And what percentage has to be reworked, right, on average? And you know that the percentage that needs to be reworked will probably be underestimated because, you know, a few here and there, maybe just a few percent, 2% maybe. Yeah, right, but maybe every 3 weeks, it's 60%. They have an accident, you know. So you have to take all of that with a grain of salt, even if they are telling you what they think is the truth. The problem here is asking directly to the salesperson. The salesperson often has zero idea about all these things. So you need to talk to someone more at the managerial level, right? Maybe with someone from procurement and then someone from their manufacturing department, right? Mm. So then you know, if you get that information, you can really have an idea, a precise idea of what their total capacity is. Now, you also need to know about their peak season and their slow season. Because if they have a lot of capacity, but you want to have your products made, let's say right now in January, and Chinese New Year is coming in February, and this is the most the busiest time of the year for them, you know, they might say yes. And then in the end, they might ship late. That happens quite a bit, right? And when I say late, it means maybe 2 months late.
Yeah.
So you need to have an idea about all of this. You need to have really a sense for that kind of planning.
Hmm. So realistically, if you're able to work with a supplier who will honestly answer these questions, you're going to get a really good result from those questions. But it sounds to me like a lot of buyers these days really could use working with local companies who are able to go and get some visibility on the ground.
Sure. The problem, might be not offering the visibility. The problem most of the time would be that the main contact has no idea.
Mm.
no idea whatsoever. And then the people behind that person would not take the time to really make a plan. You know, the questions just get lost in the shuffle. That's the most common. So yeah, it's not difficult to find a company that can send someone and explain, you know, process step by process step, what happens, how many people, how many pieces of equipment, and what is the number of pieces they make per day. It's not difficult.
Right. And that's an earlier stage, I suppose, performing due diligence on the supplier, if they are just a potential supplier at this point, is also an important tool at a buyer's disposal.
No, this is a very standard part of a technical audit. I mean, a very, very common part. You know, what's their capacity? Because capacity has such an impact on quality, as I mentioned earlier.
Mm.
So you really want to qualify them for that, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. So what actually impacts capacity in a supplier's factory? Is it just the number of people working there or the machines that they've got? I mean, can you go a little bit deeper about that?
Yeah, that's what a lot of people think. Now, when you talk to different suppliers, and then one of them says we have 80 people, the other one says we have 300 people, it really doesn't mean much. Now, okay, if it's in garment, that does mean something. But for a lot of other productions that can be more or less manual, it really doesn't mean anything. Maybe the one that has 80 people makes three times the output of the one that has 300 people, right? Mm. Maybe it's highly automated and they subcontract a lot of the processes and they just do the finishing, you know. So they might not be adding so much value, but actually their output might be much higher, right? And 300 people might be all manual and they might do a lot more operations and rely much less on external suppliers. So number of people in the end in China usually doesn't mean anything. The equipment, well, if it's, you know, high speed equipment that's very well maintained and that doesn't have to be changed over too often, that can lead to a lot of outputs. But the problem is what we see very often is that you have this high speed equipment, but you know, there's a lot of bottlenecks around them and they can make, I don't know, 20,000 pieces a day, but actually the output of the total of the full factory is only 5,000 pieces a day, just because there's bottlenecks, you know, just after that machinery, for example, right? So you can't look just at the equipment either. Now, the thing to understand is that everything impacts capacity in the factory. Sort of like quality. I often say everything impacts quality, but it's the same general idea here. The way you maintain your equipment, I just said it, but also if the equipment is down very often, that cuts your capacity dramatically, right? Mm. If it's down and then it takes 2 days to put it back on track, nicely working, and you need to reorder a special tool and you have to wait for it to be delivered and all kinds of things like that, that just impacts your capacity very, very strongly. Then your suppliers, your supply chain will determine your capacity. If they can't deliver to you, you can't make product, you can't ship product, right? So you're totally dependent on them. Quality, well, the quality of the components and the materials you get from your suppliers, obviously, if it's not good, you cannot use it, you have to send it back, you have to wait. That impacts your capacity. Your internal quality definitely has an impact on capacity, because sometimes we go somewhere in an area and they say, yeah, look, you know, we have 50 people working here. And then you observe what they're doing and you ask some questions and 30 of them are really doing something valuable, and the other 20, oh yeah, right now, yeah, they're reworking that batch. We had a problem, you know, we need to fix it quickly. Okay, well, during that time, they're not making product. They're just doing totally non-value added rework that should not have happened in the first place, right? Mm. So quality has a huge impact on capacity. The material planning and the production planning has a huge impact on capacity. If you plan things in a smooth way, you know, in the way that will make the whole operation the most flexible, making sure that always the equipment, the people, the material, the methods, everything comes together at the right time, and there's very little idle time for any of these resources. If you manage to optimize all that, you would have a much greater capacity than if you have sort of a harebrained planning system where there's always urgencies, you know, urgent stuff popping up here, popping up there. Oh, this supplier disrupted our plan because their components are not good. Oh, this customer is disrupting the plan because they're banging on our head. They want an urgent shipment of that product that we need to prioritize, and you know, and so unstable planning is horrible. It can cut your capacity in half. That's really, really bad. What am I missing here? I sort of covered a lot of things here. Mm-hmm. Staff training, definitely giving them the right methods and training and so on, has an impact on capacity because they will make fewer mistakes that need to be reworked. They will be faster. The, you know, good process engineering will make the processes easier, and easier means better quality and faster. Okay. A lot of the small tooling, fixtures and things like that can really make things much faster. Automation, as I mentioned before, obviously, if it's well integrated, well thought out, can help a lot. Even the warehouse, you know, the logistics in a factory, it's something that people really don't think of. But if from time to time they're waiting for material and a wool assembly line is idle, you know, that's pretty bad. These kind of stoppages can consume a lot of hours of your operators doing nothing. And that might happen because there's not enough people in the warehouse. It might happen because they, you know, the plan is not good, and they again, it's a harebrained sort of planning system that sends them left and right and left and right, and it's very, very inefficient. And at some times of the day, they also have to manage the deliveries from the suppliers and all of that stuff, and then they can't bring the material to the line. I mean, there's all kinds of problems. The engineering change notifications can have an impact. Making a lot of prototypes and pre-production samples on the production equipment may require some changeovers and setups and things like that. And during that time, you're not using these resources to make production. I mean, there's a ton of things. There's a ton of things that really have an impact. Mm. The mix of products, is it a very high mix, low volume sort of breakdown of the SKUs that you make? That will impact capacity. Whereas if you put up a line of 20 people assembling always the same product in the same way, same color, and so on for 6 weeks, well, they're going to gain efficiency, you know, over time. The process engineers will have time to optimize things, move people around, balance the line, do some maybe some small semi-automation, give them some fixtures, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right. So a ton of things. I guess I already covered quite a bit. A lot of things impact capacity. Don't just say, oh, these guys have 500 people, they can make a lot of products. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Okay. That's a really interesting answer, because if you ask the Chinese supplier, they might just say, yeah, we've got a lot of people, we've got all of the equipment, but it's so much more than just staff and equipment. So, yeah, very important answer there. And listening to all of those different things, which are very diverse, so everything ranging from, you know, processes through to how the equipment's being used on a daily basis and whatever, it seems to me like really the best way to get a handle on all of this as a buyer is still going to be auditing. So it's going to be something like a total quality audit or a technical process audit.
Yeah, basically checking if they know what they're doing. And since this goes much further than just the quality system, if you really want to have a good idea about that, you need more of a process audit that will go into, the way they manage their suppliers and the way they plan their production and the way they train their staff and the way they develop their new products and so on and so forth. Don't do a tick the box kind of audit. Do they have this document? Yes. Do they have this document? Yes. Do they have this record? Yes. No. This is going to be basically useless, right? So it's a totally different kind of audit here.
Right, okay. And if the listener wants to get an understanding of the type of audit that you're talking about, that is one of the audits that we do at Sofie. So I'll
Correct.
put the link for that in. That's the TPA, and you can have a look at that. So that brings us to the end of this particular topic. I'm wondering, anybody listening, if you've been unable to go to China or to Asia because of the virus and other factors, you know, how have you been assessing your suppliers' production capacity? We're interested to know. So maybe comment and let us know about that. Renaud, thanks for joining me.
Hey, thanks, Adrian.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks for joining us. If you've enjoyed today's podcast, don't forget to like and share, and you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other places that you get your podcasts from. See you next time.